The following is a presentation of Geekster Media.
Greetings, geeks, and welcome to another edition of Wizards Half. This is mini episode 90.5. These are the episodes where we get into all the nitty-gritty details we didn't have time for on the main episode. I'm Adam.
And I'm Mike.
And we are getting things started off. It was a very fun conversation for issue 90. Mike is actually on the road right now. He's traveling. Where are you going, Mike?
I am actually in Los Angeles, Adam. I flew in yesterday. I'm a complete wreck. I was about to say I'm hungover. I am not hungover, although I did have a few drinks last night. I'm jet lagged, just a tad.
But you are heading out to WonderCon, right?
Yeah, I'm actually going to WonderCon on Friday, which is in Anaheim. I'm there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
That's my old stomping grounds, Anaheim. You know, I used to work at Disneyland, and so what? Like just right what? Next to my dad's company owned a hotel, the Anaheim Hilton.
Why are you up north now? You need to come back.
Got to get back to SoCal. Yeah. Oh, I know. But yeah, I can't wait to hear your report from all your travels. We'll get that suit enough. Hey geeks, Adam jumping in here after the fact because yes, Mike has already returned from WonderCon and he met a ton of comic book celebrities, got some great pictures. If you want to see them, you want to go over to Wizards, the Podcast Guide to Comics on YouTube, where we did a full video. He showed his haul, he told his stories, but I'm going to give you a little preview here because this is something that is important for the future of the show. So check this out.
I felt like everyone was really warm and supportive at this convention. I haven't had an experience like it before.
That's so great to hear. Yeah. And I am curious though, because we kind of been teasing this. So this is the big coup de grace of all this. And in fact, there's icing on the cake after this, but you were just on the floor and you sent me a picture.
So I find a booth where they sell just original art, like pages. And I'm just flipping through because I love original art. I can never afford it, but I love it. And I turn next to me and I hear some guys laughing. And I was like, I know that laugh. And it was Rob Liefeld. I was in shock. But this is the thing about this Anaheim convention. I'm sure SDCC is even more like this. He was just there shopping. He's just such a fan of comic books. And we all know this. Rob is a fan of comics. He lives it. He breathes it. He was just there shopping for pages, I think, you know? And I couldn't resist, Adam. I know you got yourself blocked before I was a co-host. Here to mend things and build bridges. And I just went up to Rob and just told him what a fan I was. And I asked for a photo. And I feel like this is the first step to becoming unblocked by Rob Liefeld. Okay.
This is our new Wizards philosophy. Okay. You know, in light of course, recent events, we're not going to get too deep into this, but you know, we want to be a more harmonious comic book community. Right. And we've been having fun with Rob. You know, we always say he came after us. We didn't necessarily come after him to try to upset him, but you know, we seem to do that just by existing. But at this point, I think it's just going to be fun. We are going to be the podcast that loves Rob Liefeld. Okay. Anything you hear going forward, it's not going to be snide remarks. We are going to give Rob his due as he comes up in the magazine during our coverage. So that is our promise to you in 2024.
You know, before I was on the podcast and before Rob blocked our socials, he was a big part of your podcast. Why I listened, you guys talked endlessly about Rob's work. It was kind of, you know, fun to talk about that era.
And now back to our Wizards Half episode already in progress. Mike, to kick things off here, there was a question that Wizard was asking their readers on America Online, and I want to ask you this after we get into their results. What they wanted to know was, what character should get a year one series? So obviously, like, Batman Year One was a very famous storyline, and it was a trend that was starting to come up, these prequels. And even in movies nowadays, we love a prequel, right? So here are what the readers and AOL users were voting on. They want a Wolverine Year One story. So I guess that's what Origin became ultimately, because he was such a mystery. So I guess that makes sense. Now, the Joker, 16%. So again, these people with mysterious pasts where it wasn't 100% clear what was true, what wasn't. Dr. Doom. Dr. Doom Year One. I feel like there's been one by this point.
There's a Doom series, and I was hoping it was going to be that, but it ended up being a futuristic story about Doom in the future.
Oh, okay. Yes.
So maybe it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, maybe not. Now, one that 100% we know happens is for Dick Grayson Robin. We got our Robin Year One. I think we got Robin Year Two and Three. I think that was a very popular series. Pretty sure Chuck Dixon was writing that. Green Lantern Hal Jordan Year One. So the 10% wanted that. And then 7% voted for Captain America. And finally, 13% made up the other category. So a lot of people had a lot of other characters they were putting in there, including this. This is pretty hilarious. They say every character from Transformers to Galactus to Wizard Entertainment President Garib Sheamus all received one or two write-ins for their own Year One miniseries or storyline. The king of the write-ins, however, was Magneto, who came in right behind Captain America with a surprising 5% of the total vote. Now, of these characters, who would you have wanted to see most in 98? Like, who were you curious about to know what they could do?
Probably Wolverine, guaranteed Wolverine. Because I never, even when they would tell that Weapon X story, I felt like there's something else, isn't there? Like, this isn't the beginning of Wolverine. To me, the most interesting ones they should be doing Year One stories for are the ones where we just don't really know a lot about. Like, I was thinking Submariner. Like, I don't know. What was he like as a kid?
Yeah, the early years of Namor. That would be fascinating, actually. Okay, well, cool. Now, let me ask you this, though. So you wanted Wolverine. What did you think of Origin?
I didn't read it when it came out. I only read it when I started recollecting comics again. So I enjoyed it for what it was. I wasn't like, oh, this is amazing. It should win awards. It's fine. How about you? What are your thoughts on it?
I was surprised by it. It's one of those books I always go back to where like, okay, this one got me with the twist that it wasn't really him. Like, him. You think Dog is Wolverine, right? Yes. They're like, oh no, it's James. This is Little Sick Boy. You know, it's just like so cheap, but it got me. So
it's a good twist. I have to admit. Yeah.
All right. Let us get into something that everybody loves, a good throwdown in comics. And even in this issue when we were talking, Jeff Loeb said he was writing a story where Wonder Woman and was it Witchblade we're gonna throw down? Yeah, so there was a crossover story that he was putting together. So yes, it's time to check out our Last Man Standing. So this time around, we have Juggernaut versus Lobo. Never would have imagined, right? So why don't you read us a little bit of our stats here, Mike?
All right. So with Juggernaut, he's coming in at a height of 6'10". I always thought he was taller than that, but maybe it's the movies that have kind of made him seem a lot taller. And then Lobo is 6'4". Juggernaut weighs 900 pounds, makes sense. And Lobo is 210. Again, I expect like 300 pounds for that guy, just pure muscle.
Now, I have to say, on our last man standing where we had Wolverine versus Batman, we posted it online and people were just like, including Wizard staffers were commenting. They're like, Wolverine was coming in way too light in his weight because now we account for like his adamantium skeleton and all of that. But I think back then they were like, well, he's just a little guy, so he's not going to weigh that much. This time around, it seems, pretty close. But Lobo's got enough muscle that I would say 310, not 210 for sure.
Reach? Does anyone actually care about their reach? To me, that's the weirdest stat that they always give. Juggernaut is 82 inches and Lobo is 76 inches. The hometown of Juggernaut is Berkeley, California. And Lobo's is it Kazarnia? That's how I always pronounce it.
I always just say Zarnia, like the C is silent.
That probably makes more sense. The motive of Juggernaut is money and the motive of Lobo is money. So I guess that's the reason they paired them. Their power source for Juggernaut is his psychic. Cytorak? Is that the gem?
The Torak? Yeah, whatever his little gem thing is.
Torak? Yeah. I never knew what the name was of it, so that's interesting. And beer for Lobo.
Anyway, let us see how Wizard imagined this whole thing playing out. So, not wasting time with such crap as advanced planning and strategy, Lobo dive bombs the Juggernaut with his flying bike and scores the first blows. All cheap shots. Kidney punches, nut shots, kicks to the knee. Barely feeling what little made it past his personal force field, the Juggernaut counters with a slower backhand Lobo easily avoids, but does manage to bring down a building near them. Lobo, avoiding the Juggernaut's slower blows, presses the attack. But to no avail. Nothing can hurt the Juggernaut. The battle having raged on for hours and miles of battleground laid to waste, Lobo steps up his dirty fighting style, begins to use anything and everything to drop on, run through, or decapitate his magically fueled foe. But as Lobo begins to tire in his attempts to slow his opponent, he begins to realize one thing. Nothing can stop the Juggernaut. With days of battle behind him and sinking feeling that his foe is far more powerful than he imagined, the fatigued Zarnian falls prey to more and more of the Juggernaut's Superman-level blows, as moments before the Zarnians become extinct as a species, he learns, no one could beat the Juggernaut. This sounds like a TV commercial. No one could beat the Juggernaut for low prices.
The repetition. They're really pitching us on it.
But I mean, I guess that's true, because it's just like, you know, Lobo has fought Superman in the past. You know, he's pretty tough, but Superman always wins. He's kind of invulnerable. I think Lobo is pretty invulnerable, but still, like, what are you thinking here?
Well, I just think about the X-Men episode where they rip off Juggernaut's helmet and that's it. Maybe if he does that, he could win.
Well, I feel like Lobo always, doesn't he have a crowbar a lot of times?
Yes, he's perfect for it.
Just pry it off. Yeah.
I think the crowbar is right in the image, is it not? Or is it just the chains? Do we ever know? We don't see where they
are. Oh, yeah. It's that hook thing. It's not.
Yeah. Yeah. It's right there. There's a hook. Right. Just swing it at his head. Take the helmet off. He's done.
Yeah. Well, how's he going to know that? How's he going to know his power source for whatever reason is in his helmet? And when you take off the helmet,
he wouldn't know. But yeah. Is there a bar nearby? That's the question.
You know, they had to go have a beer after the slugfest. They just hung it up. But we do want to say also that Jim Calafiore was the artist on this with Peter Palmiotti on inks. It is a very cool image. This is a fun fight. So we'll post that to social media so you can take a look there. But hey, in the meantime, we want to check out some of the contests in this issue. Let's get going on Cap's Kooky Contests.
All right, so the first contest they have is Spend the Holidays with Jay and Silent Bob, and it's an art contest. All right, so here's the prizes. I'm going to start with the third prize, so we build up to the grand, okay? So the third prize is 5 Amy Chasers, each win one of 3 Kevin Smith videos. Jay and Silent Bob, number 1, a first print. They put that in parentheses. No one wants the second print. Signed by Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes, and a Jay and Silent Bob t-shirt drawn by Duncan Figretto. The first prize, 2 Clerks each win one of 3 Kevin Smith videos. Clerks the comic book, first print, signed by Kevin Smith and Jim Mahfood. A set of regular edition Jay and Silent Bob action figures. A set of limited variant Jay and Silent Bob number 1 comics. And a Clerks the comic book t-shirt. All right, now here it is, the grand prize. 1 Mallrat wins all 3 videos in Kevin Smith's New Jersey trilogy. Mallrats, Clerks, and Chasing Amy. Plus, he'll win Hill. What is this Hill?
Oh. Plus,
they're automatically assuming a man is going to win out of
it. I think they know Kevin Smith's audience.
Yes. All right, I'm gonna change it. Plus, they'll win a set of the San Diego Expo limited edition Jay and Silent Bob action figures and the San Diego Expo version variant cover comic signed by Smith, aka Silent Bob, Jason Mewes, Clerks the comic book, an Oni double feature number 1, Jay and Silent Bob number 1, Jay and Silent Bob first print variant cover by Joe Quesada and Jimmy Palmiotti, a Jay and Silent Bob t-shirt, a Jay and Silent Bob t-shirt drawn by Duncan Figretto, Clerks comic book t-shirt drawn by Jim Mahfood. I hope I'm saying his name right. Mahfood?
I think you got it. Although there were 2 t-shirts and one of them was drawn by Matt Wagner. I was like, that's interesting. Yeah. That being the case, though, you're probably wondering, how do you win all this Clerks and Jay and Silent Bob merch, right? So this is what they want. It's holiday time and Jay and Silent Bob are invited over to your house for dinner. The only thing is they want to dress up for the holidays. What we want you to do is draw Jay and Silent Bob in their best holiday attire. Draw them wearing Santa suits, reindeer horns, a yarmulke, whatever. Make it holiday themed and way cool. Put them around a Christmas tree, a menorah, in the snow, wherever. Then fill out the entry form below, attach it to the back of your drawing, and send it all in to us. And we'll choose the best and most creative entries as the winners and feature their art in a future issue of Wizard. Prizes for this contest provided by Oni Press, Graffiti Designs, View Askew, and Snoochy Boochies everywhere. All right, now let's get into our legal text here. Down with the law, they say. Contest is open to anyone except employees of Wizard Entertainment, Oni Press, Graffiti Designs, View Askew, their immediate families, and Apu, the head clerk from the Quickie Mart in Springfield, USA. Oh, nobody likes Apu. Anyway, let's get into this here. Winners will be selected based on originality and creativity by Wizard Entertainment. Warning, playing roller hockey on the roof of a store is not a good idea. It looks really cool, but it can be dangerous. A public service announcement from your friends at Wizard. You remember this, right? Infamous scene. What I found funny, though, is that the first thing they mention on the grand prize is that you win all three Kevin Smith movie videos. Like,
Well, is it VHS videos, I wonder, at this time, right? There's no DVD?
No, well, they had just started announcing DVD as, like prizes, like Pioneer DVD player, and you get anime DVDs with it. So it's just weird that here they're still like, well, you get some videos.
Well, Adam, would this be, like, an amazing grand prize for you?
I am only, like, a casual Kevin Smith fan. I like a few of his movies, but I don't like all of his movies, and I don't dig into the whole universe. It does go over the top for me a lot, like a little too far. So I like most of his humor. I think it's clever, but then, you know, just the language and the sexual content always is just a little too much for me. What about you?
Well, I'm a huge Kevin Smith fan, but like of him, I think. Like, I love him. But Mallrats is by far my favorite. I don't like rewatch his movies often, but you know, I do enjoy them.
Yeah. I mean, the one that I own and that I watch the most is Clerks 2. I like Clerks
2. Oh, interesting.
I haven't seen the third one yet.
I haven't seen 2 or 3, so.
Yeah, 2 is cool. It's got Rosario Dawson in it, and it's just, I don't know, I think it's fun. All right, anyway, let's get into our next contest here. This is the Witchblade Tomb Raider Hide and Go Seek. So we'll go in Mike's order here. We'll start with the second prize. 5 incredible investigators each win the regular cover version of the Tomb Raider Witchblade comic and all 5 of the brand new Witchblade Tomb Raider comics, each signed by Michael Turner, plus a poster of those wacky chicks. First prize, 2 diligent detectives each win a copy of the Tomb Raider 3, The Adventures of Lara Croft video game, and all 3 cover versions of the Tomb Raider Witchblade comic, and all 5 of the brand new Witchblade Tomb Raider comics, each signed by Michael Turner, plus a poster of the twosome. But the grand prize here, 1 expert explorer wins a Sony PlayStation, a copy of the Tomb Raider 3, The Adventures of Lara Croft video game, a Michael Turner sketch of Sarah Pazzini and Lara Croft, so there it is right there, all 3 cover versions of the first Tomb Raider Witchblade comic and all 5 of the cover versions of the brand new Witchblade Tomb Raider comic, each signed by Turner, plus a poster of those saucy vixens.
Damage control.
Come on. But yeah, but everybody wants that sketch. That's the Michael Turner sketch.
That grand prize is awesome. That's a contest right there.
How do you win all that loot? Hidden throughout this incredible issue are a bunch of little Lara Crofts. Each of them is causing a bit of mischief, and we need you to help Sarah Pazzini find them so we can put a stop to it. When you found them all, jot down on a separate piece of paper what page numbers you found the cute little Laras on, and send it in with your completed entry form. Get those boots on, strap that gun to your side, and get searching. You gotta love those. I mean, it's kind of fun to sprinkle throughout. The word balloons are kind of maybe not as okay. What they're having her say, but it's kind of interesting to see Lara Croft pop up here and there. But we had our discussion about Joe Mad versus Michael Turner. You are definitely the Turner guy.
I'm a Turner guy, yeah.
Have you ever come across like these issues in the back issue bins, or do you have them?
I don't think so. I've never come across them. I don't know if I'd be seeking it. I like Turner's work on DC, so.
Oh, yeah. The later stuff.
Like, I do. You know what? The Lara Croft Witchblade stuff, I have like a small stack, I think, of like different different covers of the first issue, three of them or something. I don't know.
All right. Now, this contest is sponsored by Top Cow Productions. Never play Clue with its employees. They're all kick butt detectives. That's weird. I don't know what that means. Are they saying the people who make the comic are the employees are good at Clue? Anyway, Raiders of the Lost Law is what they are calling the legal text. It says, contest is open to anyone except employees of Wizard Entertainment, Top Cow Productions, Eidos Interactive, their immediate families, and Columbo. Ever notice that you never see what he's wearing under that trench coat? I don't know that we want to. Peter Falk, we're not in it for the bond, you know? No second joke. Man. Well, Mike, that being the case, I think it's time we talk about some comics. Let's give our opinions here. Let's check out the report card. So I feel like it is long overdue that they are going to be reviewing Spawn comics. And at this point, this is Spawn 71 to 76. And you have Brian Holgan's writing. You got Greg Capullo and Danny Mickey on the art. And Todd McFarlane is checking in here and there, helping out. So the question I have for you, Mike, is you were reading a lot of Spawn comics and collecting them. And you were saying with the darkness and with Spawn, you would have a stack. And during the summer or whatever, you'd go to a cottage and you just read through everything, right?
I would. That's how I did it. Yeah.
So at some point you probably had this stack of, you know, 5-6 issues. You had read them. What they're saying here is the good. Let's read that first. Quote, intricate line work and evocative coloring make for exceptionally moody storytelling. Action scenes such as Spawn versus the Vampire Fiend and characters like the Garbage Creation Heap are richly detailed and serve to draw readers right into the story. The mysteries in Spawn have our attention. What's a vampire doing in the service of heaven? Which side does Spawn truly serve? When will Armageddon strike? These are plot points which could keep the series revving high, but the bad. Unfortunately, none of these mysteries are answered quick enough for our taste. Issue 75, hyped as a new direction for Spawn, doesn't explain anything. In fact, it seems like much of the same old, same old. Bumbling Detective Sam and Twitch are floundering around on old questions such as Spawn's identity. Spawn is still a pawn between heaven and hell with no apparent way out. And after 76 issues, he's still pining over his wife Wanda, but can't face her because he's got a pizza for a face. Throwing some mindless fights and some musings in the old Spawn alleyway and guess what? Nothing happens. Not only is the story not progressing, but it's hard to like a former sharp-as-a-knife soldier who doesn't seem all that swift. Every time Al whines about Wanda, we like him less and less. So, the skinny in their opinion, it seems like the creators are wasting time to keep the series going. Even if the main plot between heaven and hell isn't going to be resolved for a while, at least include something interesting while we're waiting. The grade, a C. So, Mike, as a Spawn fan, especially during this era, after 6 years of publication of this book, we're going into 99? This was 7 years in. This is crazy. Okay.
Yeah.
What were you thinking of the stories?
Okay. So this is an interesting thing because this is my biggest problem with comics in general right now, modern comics. The odd one, not all of them, the odd one, is they're writing knowing it's going to be a graphic novel. And to me, I'm like, I'm paying $5. Give me some piece of a story or progression of a story. However, with that said, I was reading this series. It wasn't I was bringing up a new stack, Adam, of comics I haven't read. I was bringing issue 1 through whatever had come out that year. So I was rereading from 1 again each summer.
Oh.
Yeah, I was bringing my dad would bring up, it was like a box I would bring up. One of their criticisms is he's constantly, you know, whining about his wife, Wanda. But to me, every TV show, your character can't change. He can't change until you get to the end of the storyline. So Todd's doing the right thing. It's just maybe the writing's not the strongest or whatever. But to me, reading it from 1 to there, it goes by fast. So it feels like a lot happens. But I think if you're reading week to week, it'd be like nothing is happening. Because I read Spawn to this day, and there's some issues where I'm like, wow, nothing happened. Nothing happened. But I do wonder if I read 10 issues at once, I'd be like, oh, Look at that. Three things happened.
Yeah, well, I read these issues.
Okay, I want to know what you think.
For our conversation. And so I have read like probably the first 10, 12 issues of Spawn. Yeah. And then I haven't read anything in the middle, like here and there. Like I've grabbed an issue just in back issue bits. I'll flip through it. But then when I got to this, because I didn't read this review ahead of time. I didn't want to be tainted in my opinion.
Yeah,
and they
yeah.
are saying 100% everything I was going to bring up, because I was just like, I cannot believe if you stepped away from Spawn and then 7 years later, you picked up another issue and then it is exactly the same. It blew my mind. I was like, there's been no progression except now he has a larger boot on one foot. Like, that's it. Like, it was so insane to me because, yeah, he's whining about Wanda. Okay, yes, I know that's part of the story, but every time it cuts to Wanda and Cyan and Terry, I'm just like, get out of here. On the flip side, whenever it goes to Sam and Twitch, I really enjoy it, but it did feel like they're spinning their wheels. Cogliostro comes in, he gives them a file on Spawn, you know, or on Al Simmons, you know, like of his history, his military service, and they're like putting all the pieces together. I said, what have you guys been doing for all these years? And you have, he has to literally hand it to you. There's just so much here that I understand you can space out revelations, but literally, I don't think there's been any progress for this character.
Why, Adam, why are you ruining my teenage memories? You're ruining the teenage memories. You know how excited I was when they introduced the Heap? In this, I was like, he's so cool. But am I correct in their comparison of Swamp Thing? Like in the review, which you didn't read out, is they say it's basically Todd is ripping off Swamp Thing with this storyline. So I wouldn't have known at the time.
Oh, really? Yeah. Like, did we miss a DC crossover or something? Spawn's Emerald Parliament and Green World, when they talk about issue 75, sound like blatant swipes of the Parliament of Trees and the Green from Alan Moore's Swamp Thing run. The concept of an elemental force watching over the Earth isn't an original idea, but the approach shaken by Spawn is way too close to classic Swamp Thing to be given the benefit of the doubt. So yes, I saw that. I was just like, okay, but why? And then like also the way that Spawn is interacting with the world, like he's barely appearing in these comics. Like he just kind of shows up for a second. He argues with a couple of the bums. You know, Cogliostro comes up. You better get your act together. You're important to the war between heaven and hell. Yeah, I've been hearing that for 7 years apparently, and I don't care still. But there's like a scene, and this is the thing I don't enjoy about Spawn comics is when they go to like child abuse and like weird like dark edges of humanity, like, but like there's this kid being tortured by these vampires in a warehouse and you don't have any understanding why, but Spawn is just out through the night and then he crashes through the skylight and saves the kid, but then the kid lifts up his shirt and he's got a Hellspawn insignia on his little tummy and you're just like, Spawn, he's like, you have a place to go home? Yeah, okay, go home. I'm just like, why were you even there, Spawn? How did you know this was happening? Like, it's just like all for the sake of just action and cool imagery, which is what Spawn is for. Is that right?
That's why people were buying it. Let's look at the Capullo art, just the panels. Each panel is better than most of the stuff on the stands today. It's incredible stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, if you love the art, which I 25%, I like the art. I just, the McFarlane style never really did it for me.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. And Danny Mickey is doing the inking on Capullo. That's like another great inker for Capullo, in my opinion.
I think they have a fantastic art team here. I just wish there was more attached to it. Now, as far as the other books they're reviewing, they did get into X-Man issues 41 through 46, which I cannot believe it was still being published. That's another one of those where I'm just like, what? Everybody seems to love this book, I guess, but they give it a D.
Worse than Spawn.
How could this be? And so as far as what their criticism was, it's very long. But the skinny, they just say, we can't wait for Nate to blow up. That way, the series payoff will be enough to care about him. Now, the other book here, Star Wars A New Hope manga, which was being published by Dark Horse here, is kind of interesting because they call it the best Star Wars comic ever. And they give it an A-. And I was just like,
wow.
Yeah, they were very high on this release. The skinny, they say, Star Wars comics fans rejoice. This adaptation pulls out all the stops, making it the best we've ever seen. Even the staunchest anti-manga fan will dig it.
What is it that it's bringing to the table that brings something fresh? Is it just the art?
Like, yeah, well, that's what they say. They say the art is phenomenal, exciting, yeah, intense, and vivid.
But there has to be something else. Like, is it reinterpreting it? Like, I don't
know. No. It says here, and you'll fly through the script, which is almost line for line from the original film. The scenes are all handled smoothly and accurately. So it's literally just an adaptation of the movies.
I guess it looks like this image they show on the panels of Luke behind some clouds, and then a close up of just his mouth, and then a close up of his face, and he's got a tear in his eye. It does look dynamic, I have to say.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool. So they do say the only drawback is the hefty price tag. $9.95 is a lot to shell out at one time, especially when there's four issues in the series. Can you imagine $40 for a complete story?
I know. Oh God. That's like my comic.
All right. Last one here is Batman Gotham Adventures, which is, they say, Dark Knight or Bat Light? Like Bud Light. So there were seven issues that have been released at this point, and this was Ty Templeton doing the art. This is something where it's in the style of the animated series. They're just kind of keeping that whole thing running. They give it a B-. So they like what's going on here. They just say, the skinny, if you love the animated series, you'll love Gotham Adventures. Faithful to the show, it has a great set of characters, villains, and some engaging plot angles. Unfortunately, some of the endings and character treatments may not jibe with the older comic fan. But that's always what these were, though. They were for younger readers. So it's just what it comes down to.
So it's not an adaptation. I always assumed they were adaptations.
No, it says based on the animated series, but these are, you know, original stories that they're creating for that. So let's now move on to the top 10 heroes and villains. So last time around, we had the top 10 monkeys and monkeys of comics, but now we're back to the usual suspects here. With Wolverine in the number one spot, they say, catchy sound effects. You can't deny their importance. You just can't. Look at Wolverine. He's as much defined by the snicket of his claws as he is by anything else. Really, go anywhere in the world, anywhere, walk up behind someone, whisper, snicket, into his ear. If you're not immediately pummeled or arrested, then he knows you're talking about everyone's favorite hairy-backed, butt-kicking, savage Canadian, Wolverine! Heck, catchy sound effects are so important, we even have our own here at Wizard. What is it? Well, it sounds kind of like someone stepping on a duck, and it's accompanied by a foul odor. But it works. Number two is Spawn. What's it look like when Spawn stubs his toe? A lot like this. Basically, his just mouth is wide open, screaming. And here's a little secret. Even though he's a tough-talking, street-walking, green-stuff-spewing superhero from literally hell, Spawn's a big sissy Mary when it comes to pain. Every time he gets a boo-boo, he goes running to Mama to kiss it all better. But since he's the star of multiple comic series, an HBO cartoon, and 11 teen toy lines, Spawn's net worth is more than any four Central American republics combined, even when they've just had a great banana harvest for the year. That eases a lot of pain. Number three is Batman. File it under life choices, bad ones. Batman is Batman, but Batman is also Bruce Wayne, millionaire playboy. That means he could dress like a giant rodent and punch things in the face, or sip champagne, eat caviar off of Ritz crackers, and hang and bang with chicks, the likes of which you've only seen in movies such as Wild Things. So what's he do? He dresses like a rodent, hangs out on rooftops in winter, and punches thugs in the face. What a doughhead! Give us the choice and we'd forsake comic book stardom to be hip deep in Crab Puffs and Nev Campbell. The epitome of hot girls, I guess, in that moment in time was Wild Things. Alright. Number four is Witchblade. When it comes to personal hygiene products, Sarah Pazzini, this generation's designated Witchblade chick, does half the job. The hair? Looks great. It's bouncy, full of body, and flows like Niagara Falls. But the face? Blech. There's more crusty crapperoony on her face than the entire Kennedy High School Advanced Dungeons & Dragons fan club put together. Now granted, those Witchblade tendrils across Miss Pazzini's pretty little mug are protective, but can't she do a little makeup job here to make herself look more presentable? Is it a little cover-up in order? At least some Oxy-10. Maybe some foundation? I always wonder why in these lists they are so obsessed with personal hygiene products and personal care, you know? All right, number five, Daredevil. Secrets of comics revealed. Daredevil hit rock bottom in 1987. The title was sucking wind, and no one seemed to care about old Matt Murdock anymore. So in an effort to shake things up, Marvel traded DD to Harvey Comics for Harvey Little Devil Hot Stuff. The trade was voided by NBA Commissioner David Stern. This was a good thing for Marvel, because now revitalized by a Marvel Knights relaunch and the writing of Kevin Smith, DD is kicking ass. Hot Stuff? Last we saw, he was flipping burgers at Hardee's. Now there is an alternate reality, man. That's just a team-up waiting to happen, though. Hot Stuff? Getting together with Daredevil? Come on, give it to us, Marvel. Number six is Fathom. Leading the league in come-hither looks this season is Aspen Matthews, the deep-sea beauty known as Fathom. And make no mistake, if Fathom were to flash one of these alluring looks in our general direction, we'd follow her into the deep blue without even thinking about scuba gear, swim fins, or those annoying inflatable floaty things that little kids have to wear on their arms in the pool if they have paranoid parents. Yep, Matthew says plunge, we get wet. Diver down. Yep, Matthew says plunge, we get wet. Diver down! Number seven, Calibretto. Much like NFL players and pro wrestlers, Calibretto, the war machine of Battle Chasers fame, has no neck. So if this comic book biz ever goes sour, he's got built-in qualifications for a new job. He could always go play front four, yes, all four of them, for the Washington Redskins, or get himself some nice glittery tights and take up the manly art of pro wrestling as a career. Or run for governor of Minnesota. Hey, it's nice to have options. Well, there we go. Now we know when this is taking place. Jesse Ventura winning the election as governor of Minnesota. Number eight is Thor. Speaking of guys who look like no-neck steroid-sucking monstrosities, we submit for your approval one mighty Thor. Norse god of thunder, Thor's obviously well-developed physique, however, isn't better living through chemistry. It's the result of good breeding. Hey, when your papa's Odin, all-father of the gods, you get a bitchin' bod without having to even hit the gym. And when your creative team is Dan Juergens and John Romita Jr., you get a hit comic to boot. Meanwhile, over here at number 9, Preacher Jesse Custer is just an average, normal, everyday guy in the physical sense, but he still kicks a ton of bad guy butt, using a tough streak a mile wide, a sense of right and wrong that just won't quit, and an ass-stomping sensibility that only comes from Texas. Nothing gets in his way when he sets out to set the bad guys straight, not even serious injury to his precious ocular organs. Jesse can still kick your ass with one eye tied behind his back. Finally, number 10 is Deadpool. Those of you who wasted October raking leaves, dressing up like a ballerina to get bite-sized Snicker bars, missed out on a comic event of preposterous proportions. Deadpool Month! Marvel hit with a magnum load of hilarious Deadpool one-shots and the start of Pool's big-ass Dead Reckoning crossover. Result? Cultured comic connoisseurs got a double dose of Deadpool, and newbies turned on to the Merc with a Mouth in record numbers. Score what for the Pool Man? And marketing! Now, of course, we've heard about these top 10 heroes and villains, but we know what we're here for. We want to find out about the Mort of the Month.
So the Mort of the Month is The Ringer. A big fan of The Ringer, Adam, before?
I've seen the movie with Johnny Knoxville.
All right. Criminal Anthony Davis bought a helmet from the RoboCop surplus store, got a bunch of metal rings, and cracked a safe. Surprise! The safe belonged to Marvel's hero, Nighthawk. The Ringer got his teeth busted. In jail, a prison dentist needed months to fix Davis' teeth. Why months? What's going on to that prison? What is the fixing to? When the hyped up hoop hurler got out of the joint, he promptly ran afoul of Spider-Man, who was more than a match for the Ringer's scary little rings. Spidey kicked his tail as the Ringer pleaded, "Please, not in the face." I'm guessing the new teeth are that nice. Tired of getting his teeth knocked clean out of his head, the Ringer retired. He was later mercifully put to sleep by another supervillain. His body was identified through his dental records.
Come on, that can't be true.
What is real in this?
Exactly. I'm just like, what are they playing with here? It's interesting, though, that he originally is fighting Nighthawk, and that's where he's getting some of his gear. Like, Nighthawk, who comes over from the Squadron Supreme universe, but then ends up on the Defenders, I believe, for a while, unless the 616 universe had its own Nighthawk, maybe. I know he was in, like, like he's in Earth X at one point too. Like I think he's talking to Gargoyle a lot because they were both defenders. I don't know. Lots of history there. I do want to mention the Mortometer here. We talked about the Lara Croft contest. She is stealing the Mortometer heads that they use to give the scores. So she's got one in her hand and she's pulling another one off of the chart. That's
she's
awesome.
Raiding Adam.
Oh, well, that was fun. All right, last thing here that we want to get into. This was a little bit late in the reporting, but they finally have the pictures from the annual Wizard Halloween costume party. So they would actually get together every year and have some fun. So I wanted to just get your opinion on what you're seeing here, Mike. They always put it at the very end of the issue. And so they have the wizard staff wearing some wild costumes. I'm just going to read who they're dressed up as here. I won't say which Stafford. So they have a Joker. They have a Harley Quinn. They have a Loki. They have a Mr. Miracle, Bullseye, the Crow, Eat Man. That's Greg Orlando when he was on. He was very proud of his Eat Man costume. Professor Xavier, the Beast. They have Scully from X-Files, Mulder from X-Files, Starman, Tempest, the Spot. Oh, he was just a Mort back in the day, and now he's been in a major Spider-Man film. Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz, for some reason, the Cowardly Lion, White Trash, which I don't know if that's just the embodiment of White Trash or there is a character with that name. Lame Ass Ghost Number One. I think that's just that Lame Ass Ghost Number Two. So they were just like cheap costumes, I think. Lame Ass Ghost Number Three. Yes. And finally, Whirlwind Zombie and Dead Bucky. So of these costumes, do you have a favorite here?
I love that someone dressed up as Tempest. That seems like such a deep cut right there.
Well, and for people who don't know who Tempest is, what's his other alter ego?
He's Aqualad. He used to be Aqualad. Yeah. I love it when people dress up as like the most... Well, I guess, what's he... You know, he had a mini series. Did he ever have anything else? Was he just an Aquaman?
Well, you know, he's in Titans. So,
oh, he's in Titans at this point. You're right. Yeah. But today, no one knows who Tempest is.
Yeah, and I should specify the costume for White Trash. It's Steve Blackwell, who we hear from a lot on social media, you know, the design manager. And it's literally, he and his wife are wearing like a sweatsuit, but then they have bags filled with trash that are hanging off them. So it's literal white trash. I gotta say, like, the Spot is just a great deep cut. Like, that's the best
deep cut, I feel like.
But Dan DiGiacomo is Beast, but he is the early version of Beast. He's the Beast before he's blue and furry. So it's just like, you know, the black and yellow kind of costume with a little bit of a mask on. So I just thought that's fun, like, to go for early days Beast.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get into now something that's always fun for these issues. They want to take comics to the movies. So let's check out our casting call. So this time around, the casting call is for a Titans movie because there was a big reunion happening. We've talked about this, that Devin Grayson was writing, where she was getting back together the original all new Teen Titans as a team all these years later, see how they could cope with each other's growth. So let's get into see who Wizard thought would be perfect for these characters. The first one here is Nightwing. And for Nightwing, they want Jason Gedrick, who they say was on Murder One at this point, but he was also the star, the young star, not Lou Gossett Jr., of Iron Eagle and was in Backdraft. But I'm just like, I guess I know him from Iron Eagle, but does not ring a bell. What do you think of the look, though, here, Mike?
To me, he looks great, but I'm not familiar with him at all. Like, I can't place him at all.
Is there a 90s actor that's not Chris O'Donnell that you would want to play Dick Grayson?
Never thought about that.
No. Now, somebody I would enjoy, and he had the floppy hair at this moment in time, I would love Jerry O'Connell as Nightwing.
That tracks. Yeah, I can see that.
All right, give us the Flash, though. Right, here, Mike.
They say Matthew McConaughey would be a good choice. What do you need, a roadmap? Flash doesn't. If he gets lost, he'll find another route before you even blink. Matthew McConaughey displayed that kind of determination in Contact, earning the nod from us. This makes no sense to me. This is Wally, right? That
yeah.
They're assuming. Yeah, so Wally to me is younger, in my opinion. Like, Matthew McConaughey seemed a bit too old by that point, and too, he's not goofy. Wally has a goofy quality to him.
You haven't seen Dazed and Confused? All right, all right, all right. You know,
he doesn't want that.
All right, next up here, this is really interesting.
I
for
love
the character
it.
Of Tempest, the former Aqualad, Fred Savage from the Wonder Years.
Oh god, it's yeah. The hair. They're just literally like, whose hair? Oh, Fred Savage, perfect.
So I read a few issues of this Titans series, and it feels like they're making Tempest, at least at this time, kind of the peacemaker, but he's also doesn't have a sense of humor as much. Like, other characters are picking on him and making jokes. He's like, that's not cool. We need to take care of this business, you know? So
then he's perfect then.
Yeah, I think Fred Savage, since he was a kid, has played like the no-nonsense,
he's
right?
He's the straight guy, yeah. All right. For Arsenal, they recommended Casper Van Dien. I know him from Starship Troopers. Yeah, he looks great. Again, I'm maybe because I know the maybe Matthew McConaughey would have been the right age for Flash, but all these people are older than me, so now I'm like, they seem too old.
I mean, yeah, they were only in their 20s in the 90s.
Yeah, you know? So I guess it's fine. But
the only thing is, again, as written in the Titans at this time, like, Arsenal is like a jokester, and he's just like, you know, making fun and making light of everything. He's kind of a down and out loser. Like, he's got a kid he has to take care of on his own. He can't get a job. Like, I don't see Casper Van Dien ever playing that type of character, you know? Yeah, I do feel like it'd have to be someone more like, honestly, Ryan Reynolds was young at this time, but he was like getting guys, a girl at a pizza place. He might have been a good Arsenal.
Gosling was on Canadian TV at this point.
Oh.
And he was a goofy actor. Like, he was kind of goofy.
That would be good. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Next up here for Avatar. Formerly, you know, Donna Troy, Wonder Girl, so many different ideas that they went through with her.
I just stop? I didn't even know she went through the alias Avatar at this point. I think I skipped this section of the Titans run.
This era, yeah. But they went Catherine Zeta-Jones, who I always love, and I love her in a superhero role. I don't see her as Donna Troy, though, because Catherine Zeta-Jones is so steely and serious all the time and plays it so suave and cool. And Donna Troy is like the nice girl that everybody goes to for advice. Again, at least in these comics, she has like a big meltdown. She's like, everybody, let me live my life. Stop making me figure out, you know, how to solve your problems and stuff. But she's like so nice, and that's how everybody sees her. So I don't see Catherine Zeta-Jones in that role. All right, who do we have for Argent, one of the holdovers from the Dan Jurgens Teen Titans?
Angelina Jolie. And the picture they've chosen makes her look like the image of Argent. I like how that's how they choose.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's just like the lips. You look at just the lips. And you're like, okay.
paint them blue and we're good.
For Jesse Quick, one of Michael Caneddy's favorite Flash characters, they want Heather Graham.
I'm all for this. Perfect casting.
Well, Heather Graham is a lot of fun. The only thing is that Jesse Quick has like her own like company. She's like a CEO. Like, she's super intelligent. And that's not the vibe I ever get from Heather Graham performances.
Well, she's never given the chance, Adam.
Just give her a role, you know, that she can really sink her teeth into.
Yeah. Okay, so for Starfire, they say Rebecca Gayheart. It seems okay to me.
Do you know Rebecca Gayheart? Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, I know her face. I know her from Urban Legend. That's literally what I know her from.
Yeah, so definitely that was her like big breakout role, I feel like. But she was a commercial actress, and she used to do these commercials for Noxzema, and she was like washing her face, and it was all like attitude. That's what I remember her from. This one's cool. For Cyborg, Michael Jai White.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, like that would have been awesome at the time. Spawn really wasn't happening for a sequel, but he could have played a really cool Victor Stone.
And then for Damage, again, not a character I'm that familiar with. They say Joshua Jackson. He was so big at this time that you have to throw Joshua Jackson in there. I thought he'd make a good Wally even a little bit. I know he's not as goofy, but...
That's actually a good point, because Joshua Jackson is playing a high schooler, you know, on Dawson's Creek at this point in time. But I always felt like like Damage was even younger, but I guess that's not necessarily the case. He's just a high schooler there. So I'd be okay with that. He just has to apparently grow his hair out because Damage has a long bang situation.
Yeah.
So, man, but yeah, this is actually pretty fun. If they had made, I mean, anything is better than the Titans series we got. I did not enjoy it. Did you watch it?
Yeah, I watched season one. I enjoyed parts. The character that throws me off the most is the Jason Todd actor.
Isn't it Dick Grayson?
It's Dick Grayson. Yeah. And then Jason Todd comes in.
Oh, he comes in. Okay. I think I only watched like the first three episodes. So.
Oh, no, I liked it. They shot it down the street from me. So I used to watch them shoot it. My son, he would not sleep in his crib. So I used to take him on drives and I'd drive him down this, it's not an abandoned street, but it's like an industrial section of Toronto, and it's right at on the water. So you, on one side you have beautiful view of the Lake Ontario, and the other side industrial buildings, and they were shooting Titans always, so I'd see them shooting there. I have fond memories of driving that road, Adam. And I remember watching it and being like, I don't know. I like the story. I like what they were setting up. I like the costumes look cool. It's Jason Todd, that actor. I just, maybe they cast him perfectly because he's so annoying.
I do love how you live in Little Hollywood. Like, there's just movies happening and TV shows all over the place.
Yeah, what's crazy is across the street, they were shooting The Boys. And the one day, there was a house. And then the next day, it was all cinders. It was nothing left. Like, it was completely burned down. And I think it was, like, supposed to be Afghanistan or Iraq or something like that. Yeah.
Man, that is so cool. Yeah, more reports of these. Hey, if you're not tuning into the half episodes on a regular basis, now you know what you need. A little bit of Mike Talks TV. All right, so let's close out here. There's one just little bonus thing I want to wrap up with. So if you go to the end of the issue here, Mike, we have another off-the-cuff interview. And this time around, it is with Jimmy Palmiotti, who was a very big friend of Wizard, you can say. I mean, he's in every issue. I always feel like we do the Jim and Todd type machine, but if it was Jimmy and Joe, their tally would be off the chart. So, Mike, why don't you play Wizard in this case, and I'll be Jimmy Palmiotti.
All right. So I hear you desperately wanted to do one of these interviews.
I always feel neglected by Wizard.
Don't diss Wizard. This column is not about Wizard. It's about me. Whoever does this does favors for me.
That's fine. I never say no to you guys.
No, Jimmy. Not for Wizard. For me.
Jeez, everyone has their own agenda there. Jim McLaughlin wants weird food. Garam Sheamus wants to know Kevin Smith. Buddy Scalera wants porn.
Oh my God. But what can you do for me, Mafia Boy?
Hey, anyone bothering you? Anyone stealing from you?
I want to write Daredevil.
Too much paperwork. We need something where you just ring a bell and we shoot.
Why does everyone always talk about guns with me? I don't like guns.
I don't have any guns either. Just fake guns for reference.
Reference? You don't draw, you ink.
Hey, watch it. I draw. Besides, I have a baseball bat and a shovel in my car and I'm Italian.
Oh, really? Hey, did you ever use them?
Used a garbage pail cover on a guy's head once. A guy broke into my car and was going through the passenger side. My buddy and I pulled him out by his feet and I did a Captain America on his head.
You are true mafioso. You should have thrown the garbage can top at him for effect.
Nah, pulling him out by his feet and watching his head hit the curb was good enough. He caught me in a mood.
There's that Italian talk.
People say I'm un-Italian.
You got the hair.
But I don't have a temper.
You beat up a guy with a garbage can.
Stupid people drive me insane. Like people asking me, are you Joe Quesada?
What's the deal with you guys anyway? Are you guys lovers?
It's always Joe and Jimmy, but I work on other stuff. So it's also Amanda Connor and Jimmy because I ink her stuff too. It's more Joe and Jimmy than Jimmy and Joe.
So Joe wants you.
I put the ooh in his ooh la la.
What the heck does that mean? What does it mean? What is this, Adam?
I love these interviews. Again, complete nonsense. Look, we had an article in this issue diving deep behind the scenes of the X-Men office and the editorial and writers clashing. Can we just laugh a little? Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, that does it for this episode of Wizard's Half. Thank you, everybody, for checking in and being a part of the fun. We will be back soon. But in the meantime, stay tuned to what we're up to on social media. We're at Wizards Comics on all the socials. Drop us your comments, give us your thoughts. Then you can also check out what we're doing on YouTube with so many haul videos and Mike's fun stuff that he's put together from WonderCon. You can also go on over to patreon.com/wizardscomics. What do you get there for $5 a month? You're getting the PDF scan of the issue. You're getting uncut early release episodes. You're getting bonus editions of our comic card crazy videos that we're doing on YouTube, because there's some of these packs. I just opened up a pack of DV8 cards in there for Patreon, and there was some sketchy stuff in there. Not sketches, like art. I was like, oh dear, Jim Lee approved this? So if you're curious, you can go check that out. But also, you get to be part of a community and get the first inklings of all the projects we're working on behind the scenes before we bring them to you here on the main feed. But either way, we hope that you will continue to enjoy the show. Tell your friends. You want to go leave us a review on Apple Podcasts? It always helps, but spreading the word is the best way. And hey, in the meantime, keep your books bagged and boarded.
This has been a presentation of Geekster Media.